Hello, welcome to Adult Materials. I'm Faye. Hi.
And I'm Rachel. Hello.
This is a podcast where we're reading through and discussing Philip Pullman's His Dark Materials novels, a chapter at a time, spoiler free.
In this episode, we are talking about chapter 37 of The Amber Spyglass, The Dunes.
Nice.
It's the penultimate chapter.
Oh my God. And you know what? We're here. We're here and we're doing it.
We're here. Thank you.
Contrary to a potential popular belief that we wouldn't make it to the end.
Yes. Thank you to our lovely listeners, to all of you, for being patient with us while we've just struggled through latter half of 2023.
Truly such a struggle. And it's like coincided with the like two fucking most heartbreakingly sad chapters of the book.
Oh my God. Honestly, I was sending Faye messages while I was making notes and I was just like, why did we feel like we were up to this?
I literally messaged you being like, bold of us to assume that we could talk about this chapter.
Truly. Oops. Like, I swear I posted on something on Instagram about being like, oh, we really want to be on top form so that we can deliver these final chapters with some pep in our step. I'm like, my steps will not be in any way peppy. Thank you very much.
How could there possibly be pep in our step for these two last chapters?
Like, I'm already tearing up a little thinking about how we're going to have to tackle this chapter.
Well, girl, it's happening. Do you know what I mean? This is the episode. This is the one. This is the one of two, actually, because the next one's going to be just as fucking bad.
But oh, yeah.
Here we go. We are here. But yeah, we struggled through the latter couple of months of the year, and then disaster struck in January when I got really fucking ill.
Honestly, I think the last time we recorded, you just had a concussion.
Yes.
Yes. Yep. Mm-hmm. And then... all of a sudden it was like Christmas and everything was hectic. And then you, got hit by the dreaded Lurgy at the very beginning of the year from something at New Year's, some kind of stomach bug. Fun for all the family.
Truly horrific. But I am here now. I'm recovered. Do you know when you're like in the like midst of like, 'cause it was a horrible stomach bug, like Rich said, when you're in the middle of it and you're like, I don't think I'll ever recover. And you know, it's just like a normal stomach bug. Obviously, it was horrendous, but it was nothing serious.
You just can't see the light.
Yeah. I was like, I don't think I'll ever not feel like this. I think this will just be me forever.
Yeah, you're out of it now, though.
I am, thankfully.
Yes.
Thankfully, I am. And we are here.
Yes.
Here we are to do this chapter, finally.
Yes. It is exciting. I feel like... we're simultaneously avoiding doing these chapters because we know they're going to be really sad and we're a bit burned out. But also, we're just prolonging this podcast because every chapter we do is one chapter closer to being like, do we do the next series? I don't know.
Yeah, we've got
having to like make that decision.
Yeah, we've got some decisions to make, haven't we? And it's been... such a huge chapter of our lives, 4 years, four and a little bit years when we finish this book. It's hard to say goodbye to it. Do you know what I mean? Even if we do go on and do the next books and we do the novellas in between, we'll never do these books again. That's it.
God, don't say that.
I know. I'm sorry.
Fair. I was watching, I'm very cool and I watch very boring quiz shows with my parents sometimes. Mm-hmm. I'll be watching Only Connect, which is the one that's hosted by Victoria Corrin Mitchell.
Okay.
And it's like one of the ones where basically like absolutely zero charisma, but in a way that's quite endearing. Mm. Like nobody has any, like, there's such a lack of enthusiasm because everyone's just here to do the quiz and do the questions. It's great. But one of the final question boards was like a bunch of films that Daniel Craig had been in. And one of them was The Golden Compass.
Love it.
Someone like they'd like, you know, linked all these answers together. And they're like, oh, it's films Daniel Craig's been in. And she's like, oh, can you tell us about the films? He's like, oh, this one's one of the James Bond movies. This one's a horrendous adaptation of The Northern Lights called The Golden Compass. This one's...
Love it.
And it was like, yes. And she was like, oh, you said it was a bad adaptation. And they were like, yeah, it was horrendous. The TV series was really good, but the book, yes. And the books are brilliant. But that adaptation is notoriously has great casting and terrible everything else. And I was like, yes, that was our take on it back in like 2019.
Oh, God, so long ago. God, crazy. I mean, before we get into the chapter, would like to say a big thank you to our patrons as well for sticking with us while we've been on this break. It's really nice of you guys to be there supporting us, and it means so much. And it means that we can, I know we've said this before, but it means that we can continue to actually do the podcast. So thank you so much. Also, we should mention merch because we're coming towards the end of the podcast, but the merch will stay. The merch is going to stay. We haven't had this discussion, but I'm just saying it right now. The merch will stay.
The merch will stay. I have a new merch design that is going to drop at the very end of the podcast because I have been working on it for so long.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's dependent on what is said over the next, like the last two episodes. So
Yeah. Yeah.
Keep your eyes peeled for our like grand finale merch release, basically.
Yeah, for sure. Merch wise. It's all still on that sweet, sweet merch shop. So hgmpod.co.uk/shop. T-shirts, mugs, notepads, stickers, bookmarks, all that kind of stuff.
Yes. And don't forget to check out, if you're looking at getting a T-shirt, don't forget to check out the monthly order system. There's a little tab for it in the shop to read about the details because we do it a bit differently here. So
we do indeed. And yeah, that's a really, really great way to support us as we come to the end. Also, reviews. They always help. No matter if we finish the podcast and you never hear from us again, which we definitely hope won't be the case, but reviews, rating us 5 stars on Spotify or writing a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to us is super, super helpful. So
recommend a friend.
Yes. Tell people about us. Now that the hype's died down from the TV show, we need that word. We need that word of mouth. Just in just general His Dark Materials terms, not even just for the podcast, like tell your friend about the book. You know what I mean? Like there was such hype around the TV show, and as there should be, it's died down a little bit now, and we need to get more people into the books because they're just so fucking amazing. We just need to tell more people about them.
Maybe if Phil finds out there's been a resurgence of interest in the first trilogy, he'll finally finish the second trilogy.
Yes. That is
true. That's my fear. Don't even say if we're going to do the second trilogy till he writes that bloody book.
But that's the thing, isn't it? It's kind of similar to what Jane was saying about, Jane Tranter, the producer of the TV series, saying about adapting the Books of Dust. Mm-hmm. She's like, well, I'd love to, but also I can't really commit or say yes or no because we need to know what happens at the end. Because
She likes to know the end point before she writes the beginning, which I think is a really great philosophy to have, especially for TV series and stuff, because we all saw what happened with Game of Thrones. So,
and the thing is like, you know, it's such a clever way to do it because they were able to thread so many little like Easter eggs and things into like the first series because we knew what happened at the end and all that kind of stuff. So, yes. But yes. Okay. All right. Look.
Yes.
Well, we've got to do demons. Let's do demons.
Hey, Faye.
Hi.
What would your demon have been this, since we last did a podcast, like for the latter half of the year?
So I was thinking about my demon after I'd like done my notes on the chapter. And I guess I wasn't really thinking about it in any terms of like how it would help me as an animal or like how I've been feeling as an animal. It was just for the pure emotional journey of this chapter in this book. So I have gone for a pine marten.
Oh, that's a really good choice.
Yeah. And I also think they're really, really cute and, you know, they're really scrappy and they can like climb trees and shit. And that's just, you know, fun.
Nice. I like that. I like that.
Yeah. What about you?
In the spirit of feeling deflated at the end of the year, having had to do all my boring self-employed taxes and blah, 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 and the way that this chapter just completely melted me into a puddle, I'm going to go for a blobfish.
Oh, my God. Amazing.
The only thing that can possibly explain the state of my soul at this point after being crushed by this chapter is a sad little image of a little blobfish, and I'd just have to scoop it up and carry it around with me, and we'd just melt together. It's the melty face emoji of all animals.
How do they, do they live in the sea? I can picture one, but I don't know, like, do they breathe air? Like, what's the vibe?
I feel like the classic blobfish image, I feel like I've heard somewhere that that is like a, I don't know if there's a word for like the visual version of like a misnomer,
okay.
Where it's not, so they live so deep in the ocean. So it's not a practical thing at all. I'd have to get like a pressurized tank. They live so deep in the ocean that the specimens and the pictures they've got of ones that have like come up a bit higher, and they've like changed, that's why they've changed shape.
Oh,
like
I see.
Expanded or squished or something because of the depth and the pressure or something. But I could be wrong. That also could just be a bit of misinformation.
Interesting.
Blobfish are an enigma, and that's another reason they're fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of looks like that might be true, because I think that's kind of what it's supposed to look like.
Yeah, but I'm thinking of the sad one with the sad nose.
I'm thinking of this one.
Yeah, that specific guy.
Yeah, the
meme guy.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Maybe him. And we'd blob around together and just... Because that's what January's for as well. Just being in a blanket fort and not doing anything. And
don't talk to
crying
me about,
over this book. So.
About January. January can go fuck itself. I fucking hate January.
Like, absolutely fair.
Honestly. Worst month of the year. I know that's very... Mm-hmm. Everybody thinks that, but truly. Good God, I hate January. Mm-hmm. Gets me every year. And you think I'd done 32 of these. This is my 32nd January. You'd think that I'd be like, you know, well equipped to deal with it by now. But then I get... To be fair, like this month, halfway through, I was fine. And then I went to Barcelona and I got back and now I'm like, oh yeah, here January is. Fuck it.
Yeah, it's because you had something to look forward to and now you've got nothing. No prospects.
Nothing at all. Nothing to look forward
to. Not a sausage. That's a lie. You've got our Twilight Marathon this weekend to look forward to.
That is true. I am very much looking forward to that, actually.
Should we start a Twilight podcast? I mean, I know there's a Twilight podcast. Should we just do that? We'll say bye,
Phil. We'll just never do the last chapter and we'll just do Twilight.
Yeah, sure. Sounds great.
I don't think I could bring myself to read those books again because they are so terrible.
I'd be straight in there.
They're so terribly written.
I feel like I would laugh at how bad it was and it would be fine.
Yeah, that's true. I feel like it would be quite funny, but I think I'd just get really mad at how shit they are.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. We've got to do it. We're doing it.
Yeah. We've avoided it as long as we possibly can.
Yeah, we have. We really have. Okay. Last chapter, the demons came back and they knew a secret.
Serafina came back and she knew a secret.
Serafina told Mary about the secret and encouraged the demons to share what they knew with Lyra and Will.
A big old lizard ate Father Gomez's corpse and we still didn't find out what the secret was.
In this chapter, we learn what the secret is, and we wish we could go back to when we were blissfully unaware.
Why, Philip Pullman? Why? Rude.
Why?
How dare you?
So fucking rude.
This is a travesty.
Truly. Okay, so I think this picture has gone over my head because I don't think I've thought about it enough, so I don't know if you'll be able to guess it.
Ooh, what happens this chapter? They show up as the demons find them and they're birds at first, so it could be birds.
Not birds.
What else happens this chapter aside from total emotional devastation that could be put into a picture? Is it like the Ziploc bag? Is it like Will's hand teaching the angel how to close the window?
No, I'm just going to have to show you because I don't think it's just
me.
Nothing.
Oh, it's how nothing. We feel by the end of the chapter.
Yeah, it's just a white, essentially just a white circle.
Okay. Mm. So, yeah, total emotional devastation then.
Yeah.
Amazing. I guessed it in one. Mm-hmm.
Got it. You got it.
Mm-hmm. It's the husk that we all feel ourselves to be.
Okay, tell me about this quote. I fucking love this quote, by the way. I think it's great.
The quote is, "My soul do not seek eternal life, but exhaust the realm of the possible." And it's from Pindar.
It's a really great quote.
It is. Do you know what it means? the message behind it?
I'm guessing it's don't waste your life trying to figure out how to live forever. Enjoy what you have in front of you right now.
Pretty much, which is pretty good. So this is from Pindar, who is an ancient Greek lyric poet from Thebes. And he lived between 518 and 438 BC.
Oh, he's right, so, old bastard, isn't it?
Proper oldie. Mm. Lots of quotes from this guy. He's one of the best, the most recorded, or the one that the most of his work has survived time to be on the record. And lots of other authors have quoted this specific quote. It's a much beloved quote. And it's pretty clear why Phil chose it, being that the general gist is I'm not focusing on living for a potential eternity that is uncertain, but living in the moment with the resources that are available to me now.
Yeah.
Fair. I see. Mm-hmm. I see why you've chosen this.
Yeah, for sure.
It's a very classic quote. Lots of people have used it. But also because Pindar is so... Pindar, I don't know.
I'd never heard of him.
I think it's the Pindar is the Englishization of his name as well. Okay. I think there's other various different ways that he's referred to in Latin and Greek and various other things. So I've just gone with what Phil put on the page. Mm-hmm. Because it's such an old quote, it's used in lots of places, so it's kind of hard. It was kind of hard to find the original.
Yeah.
But the message is pretty clear and also hopeful.
Yeah.
A good philosophy for life.
Yeah, for sure, yeah.
I don't know. I feel like it's mean of Phil to be like, look at the big picture, live in the moment. I'm going to crush your souls now.
I don't want to live in this moment, Phil, right now, actually. I'd rather not.
Is this the moment that I have to live in?
Yeah. Oh, Phil. We're getting into it.
Let's do it. Let's.
Okay.
Okay. I'm not ready.
I'm already ready.
I'm a bit sniffly. This is it.
I'll cry. So, Lyra and Will, they're in their little love bubble. That's all they're doing. They're just kissing and smooching and walking, and there's lots of lovely descriptions. I love the way that Phil describes being in love. So they looked dazed, as if some happy accident had robbed them of their wits. They moved slowly, their eyes were not focused on what they looked at. It's very we're moving through the world in this different way, and it's so whimsical and it's just very cute.
Very carefree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lol. Enjoy that.
Yeah, enjoy this for half a page.
Yeah.
No, it's really nice. And the descriptions of all the places they're in are so lovely. Mm. And so the sand and the sea. And they basically they spend the whole day together, and then they go and have a really nice meal with Mary and Atal. And they're we just really feel the fresh air. So let's go to the beach. And they basically have just this really long, lovely day together.
Yeah.
And just chilling on the beach. And then they hear birds calling in the distance.
Yeah, they do. They do.
I'm going to read it. Mm-hmm. They both turned their heads at once because it was a bird that sounded like no creature that belonged to the world they were in. From somewhere above in the dark came a delicate trilling song, and then another answered it from a different direction. Delighted, Will and Lyra jumped up and tried to see the singers, but all they could make out was a pair of dark, skimming shapes that flew low and darted up again, all the time singing and singing in rich liquid bell tones, an endlessly varied song. And then with a flutter of wings that threw up a little fountain of sand in front of them, the first bird landed a few yards away, and Lyra said, Pan?
Do you know what? It's just so fucking cruel of Phil, isn't it? To be we've been yearning for this proper demon human reunion for so many chapters, and then we get it and the demons have to tell them this fucking horrible news, and it's not this amazing we get some nuggets of really lovely bits where Will meets his demon and stuff, but it's not this reunion that we wanted. It's a horrible thing where it's we've got some real horrible shit to tell you.
Yeah, I feel like it's really mean to give us the demons back in one chapter, and we're like, oh my god, Pan's back. I haven't heard him speak since halfway through this book. It's been so long. And then, oh my god, the kids have fallen in love. Oh my god, it's so cute. I'm so glad they found each other. The demons have found them. And then literally within the same chapter, they don't even get a chapter for Will to get to know his demon and Lyra to get to know Will's demon. None of that. just immediately into Bad News Bears. Great. Yeah.
I love, right, okay, so there's a literary trope that I love that I've mentioned so many times throughout, especially this last book, mm-hmm. when Phil gives us like a little snapshot into the future. This is when I messaged you earlier and I was like, I'm crying already. So,
oh yeah.
So, the other bird still circled overhead, still singing. And then she flew down to join him, another dove, but pearl white and with a crest of dark red feathers. And Will knew what it was to see his demon. As she flew down to the sand, he felt his heart tighten and release in a way he never forgot. 60 years and more would go by, and as an old man, he would still feel some sensations as bright and fresh as ever. Lyra's fingers putting the fruit between his lips under the gold and silver trees, her warm mouth pressing against his demon being torn from his unsuspecting breast as they entered the world of the dead, and the sweet rightfulness of her coming back to him at the edge of the moonlit dunes. I can't fucking handle it. I just can't, like... There's just something so profound about we followed these children and then Phil will just be like, oh yeah, and when Will was an old man, he would think back on these things. And I'm like, I can't think about Will as an old man right now, okay? I can't.
Mm-hmm. I think he does it at least one more time in this chapter as well. Does. And it's like, yeah. It's so rude. So rude.
So fucking rude. That was when, like, when I was reading it earlier, when I could feel myself getting choked up when I was reading it then, but that's when I was like, okay, that's when I knew that this chapter was going to just fucking finish me off. Just
absolutely devastating.
Yeah.
Yeah, truly. Pretty much. Mm-hmm. They sort of have not even a catch up with the demons before mm-hmm. Lyra notices that Pan is distressed and that he's not happy. Mm-hmm. And he quickly changes back from a bird into one of his favourite forms, an ermine. I'm glad that we get to see mm-hmm. him be his little classic white ermine form.
Yeah.
One last time. One last time. Just bringing yes. Lynn into it. A lot. And Will feels what is... We're getting... So this weird thing. We're getting demon reunion. Kids being revelling in the feeling of being in love. Will... gradually throughout the chapter, peppered through this chapter, Will's discoveries about what it feels like to have a demon. Mm-hmm. Because just as Pan changes into an ermine, his demon changes form as well. And he feels the little grip in his heart as she switches from bird to cat. Mm-hmm. And like him experiencing these things and experiencing and reveling in like, oh my God, this is what it's like to have a demon. But at the same time as receiving devastating news from these demons and like having to like battle with some of the hardest decisions they've ever had to make, and it's like yeah. It's so much all at once. I want him to be able to revel in peace.
for sure. Also, the like Will meeting his demon for the first time and like describing those feelings of having a demon, it's almost like Phil's taking us back to the beginning and like reminding us of how we felt when we first discovered what demons were and how they worked and how humans felt about them in that connection. And it's just like, okay, Phil, I see what you're doing here.
You're reminding us why we bloody love these books. Yeah. And people are still obsessed with the demons. Yes.
Yeah. And Kayava tells Will her name, which is very yeah. sweet. That's very sweet. I think when Will says that he marvels to hear a part of his own nature telling him something that he didn't know, that's really interesting, isn't it? Because, again, like, Demon Watch, it's like, we know that demons and humans share some part of like their consciousness, because we've had it where Lyra and Pan have, you know, pretty much communicated telepathically, all Pan's known something and then Lyra's immediately known it. But now I'm wondering, is because of, we know they haven't been severed, that's been explained to us, but because of that distance between them, do you think that's why they don't instinctively know what they're about to say?
Yeah, is it that their connection is... Because Will's never got to have a normal demon connection. He's only ever going to have this witch's demons connection.
Yeah. Oh, that's true.
Which is part yeah. of the news that they deliver, is they're like, number one, your witches now, babies. Enjoy. Number two, yeah. the windows. They've got mm-hmm. to go.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, so Will's getting to discover what it's like to have a demon, but he'll never know what Lyra and Pan had growing up.
That's true.
He'll never know the like normal demon connection. He'll only know this like separated one where, yeah, maybe there is information that they're not both like party to, which yeah. is kind of weird.
Yeah, and sad. It's just yeah. another bit of sadness to add to this episode. we learn about that Dust is leaving, obviously, the world. Obviously, we knew that anyway, but we learn that Dust is leaving the world through these open windows. And it's not necessarily through the open windows, it's through the edge, isn't it? Like the very, like, tiny edge of the window, like Dust is slipping through there. So we learn that. And then there's like, I really love how Phil describes this, because as you mentioned, that means that all the windows have to be closed so that we don't let any more dust out. The understanding was beginning to dawn on Will and Lyra. They fought it, they pushed it away, but it was just like the grey light that seeps into the sky and extinguishes the stars. It crept past every barrier they could put up and under every blind and around the edges of every curtain they could draw against it. I love that fucking like analogy of when you close the curtains and there's still, even if you close the curtains on a bright day, you can still see light around the edge of the curtains. Like, that's such a fucking beautiful metaphor. Like, I just, sometimes I'm like, when I like listen, it's usually when I listen to songs and when I hear great lyricists or when I read books that from really good writers, I'm like, how the fuck did you ever think of that? That is so profound and so amazing. Like, how is that in your brain?
I love, especially with this as well, because as they come to the realization that every opening must be closed, every single one, it finishes with like, then the full bleak daylight struck in.
Yeah.
And so it's like, it's touching on the metaphor, establishing it, coming away from it and giving us the content, and then going back to the metaphor to reinforce it and be like, and this is it. I also love that he's chosen daylight specifically as this thing, because it's supposed to be like something dawns on you. Usually the coming of dawn is like this lovely thing. It's like, yay, more like we've gotten through the darkest part. The light is finally here.
Yeah.
And it's like a celebratory thing. But this is like, they're like, no, they don't want this. It's turning this thing that should be bright into like a thing they're trying to keep out that they don't want. And I kind of love that it's like, usually like daybreak and dawn is supposed to be so nice. And it's like, no, it's bleak daylight that's striking in. I kind of love that.
Yeah. Because they want to be left in the dark. That's why, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's a really great metaphor, for sure. They'd rather be left in the dark.
I want to stay in the dark.
Right? So a theme throughout this chapter is grief. There's so much grief, so many tears, so much anger, all these emotions that you would associate with grief. Mm-hmm. And we get a lot of like, this is the first taste of it. We get Lyra, you know, so overcome with grief that Will literally says he thought that she would die of grief right there and then.
Mm-hmm. So being as grief is such a theme of this chapter, do you think we can identify the like five stages of grief going on here? Because I feel like the window analogy and the daylight analogy very much sits in the denial category.
Yeah.
Them trying to like not acknowledge this thing until they finally have to.
We definitely.
Denial, anger, bargaining, depression, acceptance. And I think we get a pretty good amount of bargaining as well.
I was literally just going to say, we get a lot of bargaining. We get anger, definitely. I think we get all of them.
Yeah.
But we can like point them out as we go along, I guess.
Yes.
So it's interesting how both of their brains work, because obviously it's dawned on them, as we mentioned with that lovely analogy, that the windows can't stay open. So what are they going to do? Like, they can't live in the same world, because we've heard from Will's dad about how you can't live in someone else's world without becoming really ill and then dying. So it's interesting to me how their brains work a little bit differently. Lyra, she immediately knows, they both know, but Lyra's like, okay, I am willing to like go straight into this grief immediately. Will kind of like stays on the edge of the grief, and he's a little bit like, no, there's a way to work this out. There's like gotta be a loophole somewhere, which is again denial.
Yeah, he's more of like a problem solver, I think, in that sense.
Yeah.
I love how the way that this information is being pieced together as well is, it's things that we know as the reader. We know that they've had a conversation with Joppery where they found out that you can't live healthily in a world that does not belong to you. Your demon will suffer. You will suffer if you live in a world that doesn't belong to you. But the demons don't know that. They've gone off and got this separate piece of information, which is that the windows need to be closed, which we found out last chapter with Mary and Serafina.
Yeah.
And it's, we're not receiving new information here. We're just witnessing these pieces of like information coming together and like forming a conclusion that our main characters have to like live with. And that's her, and that is still, it's not new information, and yet it's still horrendous and like heartbreaking to read.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's so clever as well, just being like putting this big picture together. Mm-hmm. And we do know all of these facts, but putting it together in this chapter and it still being so totally devastating is, I guess, a job well done.
Yeah. Yeah. Truly.
Oh, slow clap for Phil for breaking all of our hearts.
Yeah, absolutely. So we do get, as again, peppered into these like stints of like grief and all this bargaining and sadness and anger, etc. As you mentioned, we get these little moments with Will and his demon, and they touch for the first time. And he does it's so cute. He does what you would do with an actual cat. Like, he puts his hand out to like let the cat like come to him and like touch his face. It's all very so cute.
I love that he's a cat guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just so sure. cute.
So they carry on, like, they go through their like options. They talk about, as we mentioned, Joppery. The demons like emphasize that all the windows have to be closed. They talk about like, well, how did like Boreal do it? We know that he could go back into his own world, so he like spent time in birth, and I guess when he started to feel ill from it, he'd go back into his own world, etc. It's funny to me. I feel like we get a little bit of a sense of like Lyra's, you know, like our, like, not old Lyra, because Lyra at her best Lyra-ness when they're talking about the angel, and she's like, well, how do you know she's not lying?
It's the internal, it's the same internal misogyny that was existing in the very first book when she was thinking about like the female scholars that smelled of cabbage. Was it the she accused of smelling of cabbage or something?
Yeah.
And being frumpy. And like the fact that she immediately is like, she.
Yeah.
And like, oh, I've never heard of one of them. Maybe she was lying.
Yeah.
I kind of love that because it's a classic thing of picking somebody, which I'm gonna do this chapter, picking somebody to be pettily against and angry at for no particular reason.
It's like, for sure.
And it's also here for it.
And it's also like the arrogance of Lyra as well, because, you know, now she has seen a lot. She's seen so much, more than most people will see in their lifetimes. So now she's like, well, I've never seen one of those.
Yeah.
So and if I haven't seen it, then how can it be real?
Exactly. I love this little bit of information that we get. That Pan reveals that they got from the angel, which is that a thing that we speculated about multiple times during the TV series and is actually confirmed right now. And I'm glad that we have confirmation, because I was saying this like, I think it's this, this and this. And then I couldn't remember if it was true, which is that the specters, the specters, said Will, we saw them during the battle for the first time. What about them? And Kiava says, well, we found out where they come from, and this is the worst thing. They're like the children of the abyss. Every time we open a window with the knife, it makes a specter. It's like a little bit of the abyss floats out and enters the world. That's why Chittagatsi was so full of them, because of all the windows that they left open there. Number one, love that Will is like, oh, we? She thinks of things that I thought of doing as me, as we. Adorable. Yeah. Number two, children of the abyss. Perfect band name. Perfect chance to mention that the new piece of merch that we're going to bring out is, and the reason that I can't do it until we've covered the last chapter, is that it's all the band names that we've thought of during all three books.
Yeah.
As a really cool festival t-shirt. So it's like HDM Fest. Mm-hmm. And then I've designed like logos for all the different band names. So we've got like Spectres of Indifference, the Harpies of the Waste, Cesspit of Moral Filth,
Natural Twats. Natural Twats.
I think it was Azrael's band, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And just all the different band names that we've thought of through this. I think Panzerbjorn, just Panzerbjorn, is one of them, because obviously it's a metal band with bears in it. But yeah, and I think Children of the Void is going to be like Nine Inch Nails vibes in my head.
Children of the Abyss is giving...
Of the Abyss, of course, yes.
It's giving doom metal to me. I think it's like doom metal. It's giving that vibe. Like proper, like meaty.
Oh, I was hearing a bit more like synthy vibes, like a little bit more like Nine Inch Nails-y.
Interesting.
Like something a bit more sleeker on the edges, but still very gothy.
Okay. We could do like, I can't remember if we've already got one, but the like metal writing could be for Children of the Abyss.
I don't even attempt to do metal writing. It's so confusing. I love it. I love seeing like the band t-shirts being like, try and guess what this says. Just
yeah.
try.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Like, I don't know. Yes.
Yeah, so spectres, they're made when a window is cut. And that is something that we did not know before. And they feed on dust and demons. That's how they get bigger and stronger. Yeah.
And then Will feels really guilty about it, which is really sad, actually, because we know that in The Subtle Knife, he's speculated as to whether his mum had been affected by a spectre.
Yes.
And then the fact that he's now coming to this realization that every time he's used the knife, he's created these things that he's seen the devastating effects of, and potentially even personally is in his own life, is like really heartbreaking.
For sure. For sure. I think like they're just really selfless kids, because when Lyra then says like, we can't let that happen, we've seen what spectres do, and I think that, you know, a lot of that comes from seeing these horrific things firsthand that they shouldn't have seen as children. But they're very selfless kids, because like when I was a kid, I guess you don't have that much of a grasp on what stuff like that means, to like, you know, harm someone permanently forever. You're just a bit like, yeah, I don't know that person. Like, it doesn't have as big of an impact on you, but I guess because for them it's very real and they've seen it firsthand. But they are very selfless children.
They are. They've got a lot of like critical thinking and empathy, like skills, like coordinating here, because there is no way that I would make half the sacrifices that they are making in this chapter as a selfish teenager. Thank you
for
very
sure.
much. I would
for
never.
Sure. Will remembers Yorick's warning. When Yorick said, what you don't know is what the knife does on its own. Your intentions may be good. The knife has intentions too.
Yeah. He knew. He knew it was bad news bears. It gave him the heebie-jeebies.
Yeah.
For a reason.
Yeah. So then we have this little back and forth between Will and Lyra, where Will says, I'll come and live in your world. And Lyra then thinks, how could Will come and live in my world when he has his mum to think about? He's probably thinking about his mum. Mm-hmm. He's just met and held this beautiful, healthy demon. He's never had any time with her. To go into Lyra's world would ruin that. Then we have, what if Lyra goes to live in Will's world? Mm-hmm. And like this just like fucking fully like breaks my heart. Lyra's like, look, me and Pan are strong. Like, we could come and live in your world. Like, you know, Dr. Malone, she might help. We could find someone to help with, like, the, like, illness that will happen to us if we, like, come and live in your world. And Will says, do you think I could bear that, Lyra? He said, do you think I could live happily watching you get sick and ill and fade away and then die while I was getting stronger and more grown up day by day? 10 years, that's nothing. It'd pass in a flash. We'd be in our 20s. It's not that far ahead. Think of that, Lyra. You and me grown up, just preparing to do all the things we want to do, and then it all comes to an end. Do you think I could bear to live on after you died? Oh, Lyra, I'd follow you down to the world of the dead without thinking twice about it, just like you followed Roger. And that would be 2 lives gone for nothing. My life wasted like yours. No, we should spend our whole lifetimes together. Good, long, busy lives. And if we can't spend them together, we will have to spend them apart.
It's a lot. Also, I think it hits me more reading as an adult, as someone that's past the 30 bar, when he says that they'll only be in their 20s.
Yeah.
Because as a kid reading that, of like 13, 14, when I read it for the first time, someone saying they're in their 20s, I'm like, yeah, 20's old.
Exactly.
Know?
Like,
whereas now I'm like, 20 really is just baby.
Yeah.
Like,
and I think that it's really, again, like Will with this emotional intelligence, because like when you, like you just said, when you're a teenager, 10 years seems like a lifetime. 20s, being in your 20s seems so old, that to have Will be like, actually, that's no amount of time at all. I think, like, in my teenage brain, I'd be like, oh, yeah, like, I'm not even thinking about 10 years' time. Because you just don't when you're a teenager.
Yeah, well, because, like, 10 years ago, they were 3 or 4 years old.
Yeah.
Like, that's over half their lives. That's such a big chunk of their lives. So it seems like such a big time chunk, right? Whereas, like, yeah, thinking about it now, you're like, 10 years is not even a third.
Yeah.
And we're not even halfway, you know? Mm-hmm. It's kind of like proportionally. And he can understand that at that young age, and that's kind of wild. And like recognizing that also that your 20s are such like a vital mm-hmm. time, and to be like fading away in your 20s would be devastatingly heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And also like to, not only that, but to see the person you love fade away
yeah.
at that age. Like, ugh. And to recognize that, well, too clever, too heartbreakingly emotionally intelligent for me.
I know. He then talks about what his father said. He comes to like this realization about the Republic of Heaven, which like I kind of struggle with a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like I don't really know if I understand what he's saying. Are they just saying they should build better worlds in their own world?
So I'll read the yeah. quote. He stopped and turned and went on. Do you remember another thing he said, my father? He said we have to build the Republic of Heaven where we are. He said that for us, there isn't any elsewhere. That's what he meant. I can see it now. Oh, it's too bitter. I thought he just meant Lord Asriel and his new world. But he meant us. He meant you and me. We have to live in our own worlds. I kind of get that realization, applying it to his own life. Because, like, I know Asriel kept referring to his goals as the Republic of Heaven. But to be like, no, Lyra, what I've got with you is heaven, or my idea of that. And that news that my father gave is actually that we have to find a way to make that for ourselves apart from each other, even through all this, I feel like is, again, very astute of him to put that together, to decide that that's what that meant.
Yeah.
Especially because, I mean, not that Will knows that Asriel's a goner, but...
Goner.
Asriel's kind of irrelevant now.
Yeah.
So.
Very true.
Yeah.
Yeah, very true. So, Lyra...
I can't. I'm so mad.
Right. We had this conversation with Lark from hashtag Ruthless Productions, and I can't remember if it was on our episode or the episode that we did for their pod feed. So you'll have to go and listen to both. I just simply do not agree that Lyra should lose the ability to read the alethiometer.
100%.
To take it away from her when, yes, I totally understand that it was given to her by Grace, but hasn't she earned the right to have that ability?
I am livid with Dust.
Yes.
You know how yeah. we've been saying, like, Dust has been kind of getting personified throughout these books, and, like, it's kind of got its own sentience and consciousness. And it chose Lyra. It chose Lyra to fall in love with Will, to release the... ghosts from the world of the dead. It needed Lyra to help it, like how the sea chose Moana
yeah,
to
yes,
find the heart
exactly.
of the ocean. The sentient thing chose Lyra, and it gave her these skills. It helped her, it guided her, and it's not grateful. It's been saved, and it's not grateful enough to just let her keep the one thing that she had, the special skill.
Yeah,
she doesn't get to stay being a special girl because she served her purpose. It's used her.
Yeah.
And now it's just spitting her out as if she's washed up and no longer useful. Like, thanks for saving me. Yes, I'll take back all the presents I gave you to help me. What?
Complete. Like, you put it so fucking well. It's just like spitting her back out into a world where she felt like she kind of didn't belong anywhere because she didn't have parents. She lived in Jordan College with the scholars. It wasn't an amazing upbringing. She obviously found solace with the Egyptians, and I'm sure she will when she goes back there. But you're sending her back without the love of her life, without this ability that she's grown so, I was going to say accustomed to, but that made it sound like she's not grateful for it. But she is the personification of the alethiometer. Like, even if it was given to a different person by Grace, it wouldn't have been the same as if Lyra had had it. Like, I just simply disagree. And the fact that, like, I'm skipping ahead a little bit, but obviously, you know, Zephania says that she'll have to spend a lifetime relearning it. And I'm like, but what is the point? Like, I'm just a bit like, okay, she's going to spend a lifetime relearning the alethiometer. By the time she's mastered it again, she'll be nearly dead because she's spent a lifetime doing it.
I know I just called Lyra out for being like, who's she? Mm-hmm. Who's that angel? I bet she's lying. I hate this angel so much. She is so condescending.
Yeah.
She's here to like deliver this like moral message that's like, oh, wouldn't you so much rather have earned £1 million through hard work than just have it given to you? No. I'd so much rather have it given to me. Thanks very much.
Yeah.
I've just saved the world with my kisses and my love and my rescuing all the dead from the world of the dead. I deserve my gift. I deserve it.
Like, honestly.
She has worked hard.
Yeah.
She's
exactly. Lyra and Will have worked harder than like anyone will ever work in their entire lives in the like how many months that they've had to do this.
Sacrificed so much.
They shouldn't have to sacrifice any more things. And also the fact that Zephania, she only comes because she wants Will to teach her how to close the windows.
Give me some more of your knowledge.
Yeah.
Pour some more into my cup. Oh no, we're not going to give anything back to you. We're not here to actually help you in any way.
Yeah.
Thanks for all the help. Nah, you're stranded.
Yeah.
I'm so angry. I'm angry with Dust. I'm angry with Zephania for being so condescending and showing up at the last minute and just expecting all this help and then just like not helping, not coming with any solutions. And I'm angry at Phil for doing this to these characters.
Yeah.
I understand the need to completely devastate us emotionally. It's very impactful. But some of the choices are just rude.
And also, I just think, yes, the decision to pull Will and Lyra apart, it's devastating, but like you said, very impactful. Why are we kicking Lyra when she's down by taking the alethiometer away from her? Why do we need... That's not necessary.
Yeah.
It's just not necessary.
I think we mentioned this when we were chatting with Lark about how Philip Pullman kind of had a bone to pick with C.S. Lewis over the whole... Lucy? The oldest sister like grows up too fast and then she's not allowed into Narnia anymore because she likes things that are too grown up. And it's like Phil is quoted somewhere saying like he didn't want to punish his characters for growing up the way that C.S. Lewis did. He didn't want to punish them for that. He wanted to encourage that growing up, but also that keeping of that imagination.
Yeah.
This feels like she's being punished for growing up.
It does.
She's fallen in love. She's recognized those feelings. She's had this like moment. And as a part of that wonderful moment she's having of like growing into herself and maturity, she's also felt something being taken away from her.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's rude. Mm-hmm. It's mean.
Mean. Rude.
It's not necessary.
Really? Truly.
Yeah.
God. Okay. So
I guess we should talk about Zephania and her rubbish anyway.
Yes. So I did want to call out one thing. So Lyra tried, we have this like whole page and a little bit more maybe of Lyra trying to read the alethiometer. One thing that I wanted to particularly call out in this is when Will is watching her read the alethiometer. So she crossed her legs, pulling the skirt over them to make a lap. Will lay on one elbow and watched. The bright moonlight reflected off the white sand lit up her face with a radiance that seemed to draw out some other radiance from inside her. Her eyes glittered and her expression was so serious and absorbed that Will could have fallen in love with her again if love didn't already possess every fibre of his being.
It's too cute. I can't. We get another little flash forward. It's all about Will loving Lyra this little bit and I'm just so obsessed with it.
Yeah.
When she first sits down with the alethiometer, she sat down wiping her cheeks with the palm of one hand and reaching for the rucksack with the other. She carried it everywhere. When Will thought of her in later years, it was often with that little bag over her shoulders. She tucked her hair behind her ears in the swift movement that he loved and took out the black velvet bundle. And it's like, don't tell me that he's thinking of her with that little rucksack in future years. Don't tell me about him reminiscing about how much he loves her and she's got that little backpack on. I can't.
It's happening. It's like, oh, fuck me.
Who knew it would be the little rucksack that tipped me over the edge?
Not the little rucksack. Oh, God.
It is.
Oh, for God's sake. Oh. I just can't do this. I just can't. Look, We have the big paragraph where Lyra's like, why is this happening to me? Why can I not read the alethiometer? She's like, we learned that she, like us, had an inkling that this would happen. She was like, I used it to get to Roger. I used it to free the people in the land of the dead. And now they've taken her away from me. And she has had that inkling for a little while. And then Will can't do anything to help because he knows that what she's just said is true. And it's just, how can one little being hold so much devastation?
Honestly, mm-hmm. The way that Pan turns into a little mouse, and just like he did in one, again, mm-hmm. in the first book, in The Northern Lights, there's a bit where he turns into a mouse and he puts his little paws on the dial.
You drew that for the chapter.
And it's one, it's such an iconic mm-hmm. image, the fact that that happens again, mm-hmm. that again, it's just tying us all back to the, and it's too much.
Yeah.
I hate it for her that she just knows it's gone mm-hmm. and that there's nothing that he can do about it. Yeah. And it's like, what? And then the angel shows up.
Oh, here she is.
Zephania shows up to come and be condescending about the whole thing, and it's very annoying.
Yeah.
But you know what? Again, putting it out there, nothing better than somebody coming and being mildly annoying for you to direct your rage at in a time when you want to just be horrendously sad.
Yeah.
But there is some anger there. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it helps to focus on the anger.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm doing.
Yes.
I'm not going to fall into a puddle. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be angry at this angel for being condescending.
Yeah. Fair.
Channel it.
Yeah. Channel it. We do get some like interesting little points with Zephania, just in terms of like Lyra's like, oh, she's naked. But also, what would angels even wear? So it means nothing that she's naked. And mm-hmm. also, when they meet her, it feels like she knows, like they can feel that she knows them like intimately at their like hearts. She already has all that information. And then, she's just immediately like, oh yeah, I know that you're like devastated by this thing that you found out, but I need you to help me close a window.
Yeah. Just like, Soz can't help you, but can you help me?
Also not their sorrow leaving traces in the air. Can't handle that.
It's a lot. It is a lot. I get that Zephania is like, she is showing some empathy in that she's like, because Will says that he'll show her and in return, can you help us? And she says, not in the way you want. I can see what you've been talking about. Your sorrow has left traces in the air. There's no comfort, but believe me, every single being who knows of your dilemma wishes things could be otherwise. But there are fates that even the most powerful have to submit to. There is nothing I can do to help you change the way things are. And it's like, ugh, like I hate it. I hate this. Like everyone knows how sad you are, but no one can do anything about it.
It's that like, helpful?
Lyra asks about why she can't read the alethiometer. She gets it spat back in her face that she read it by grace and that she'll have to regain it by work and that how long it will take is a lifetime. And that when she says a lifetime, she means like a whole last
lifetime. Well, this is what I was saying. Like, what is the point? Because by the time she's learnt to read it, she's going to be like nearly dead.
Right.
So what's the point?
Yeah. She's going to be like, who was the old alethiometer man from the Magisterium that was really slow?
Oh, is it Fra Parvel? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. This bit here, like you were saying earlier, do you know, with like, we've got all this like snippets of knowledge that we already know that has been like peppered throughout the books, but maybe we've just not thought of them in this particular way. And this bit kind of highlights that to me, because even though I've read this book before and I've watched the TV show very recently, I started getting my hopes up at this bit where Zephania is like, oh well, like, because like humans are creating dust all the time, we could probably have like one window left open. And I'm like, me in full knowledge of what happens in this book, like, oh my god,
is it actually different to how I thought?
And then, obviously, it's such a fucking disgustingly horrendous build-up as well from Phil. What bastard. Like, just... And then you're like, no, it has to be the one in the Land of the Dead. Like, we can't not have this be a thing. Like, we can't shut that and have the people trapped there again. It just can't be a thing. So, yeah. Just, you know, just within our reach, but Phil pulled it away yet again.
Yeah, and it's that whole thing of like, if they live their lives fully and they encourage other people to have curiosity,
and use their intuition and like follow the pursuit of knowledge and all of this kind of stuff that the books have kind of been giving us and what we've been told the dust thrives on and is created by. But not only that, that if they live their lives in a way that encourages other people to do that, that will allow them to have good stories, good true stories to tell to the harpies. So it's all like interconnects in terms of like, they need to encourage people to live in this way, not only to help create the dust that fuels the window staying open, but to help them escape the world of the dead.
Yeah.
And be guided by the harpies once they get there.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's all kind of cyclical in that way, which is nice, mm-hmm. but also devastating still.
Yeah. Yeah. There's, I love this paragraph of comparing Will's anger and rage to the ocean.
Yes.
And I know we're like reading so much in this chapter and we'll continue to, but I have to read it mm-hmm. out. So Lyra says, on the back of what you were just saying about telling people around like the harpies and stuff, Lyra says, we've got to tell them that, Will. Alone, though. Yes, she said, alone. And at the word alone, Will felt a great wave of rage and despair moving outwards from a place deep within him, as if his mind were an ocean that some profound convulsion had disturbed. All his life he'd been alone, and now he must be alone again. And this infinitely precious blessing that had come to him must be taken away almost at once. He felt the wave build higher and steeper to darken the sky. He felt the crest tumble and begin to spill. He felt the great mass crashing down with the whole weight of the ocean behind it against the iron-bound coast of what had to be. And he found himself gasping and shaking and crying aloud with more anger and pain than he'd ever felt in his life. And he found Lyra just as helpless in his arms. But as the wave expended its force, the waters withdrew. The bleak rocks remained. There was no arguing with fate. Neither his despair nor Lyra's had moved them an inch. How long his rage lasted, he had no idea, but eventually it had to subside, and the ocean was a little calmer after the convulsion. The waters were still agitated, and perhaps they would never be truly calm again, but the great force had gone. Huh. Honestly, you know me, obviously I'm a sucker for any kind of, like, water in general or a water analogy. That was, like, fucking perfect and just devastating. The just last line of it, of, like, yes, that big crushing, horrendous wave had gone, but the waters would probably never be calm again.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of similar to a lot of people that describe ways that people move through grief mm-hmm. is that it comes in waves.
Yeah.
And like, so Phil describing this moment as like the first big wave, but the waters never calming again is like, I feel like a perfect way of like tying into that quite commonly used analogy. Also just like a great chapter for analogies. We've had the little dawning of the sunlight. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of probably quite clever choices of picking things that are like things you can't control.
Yeah.
The weather, the dawn.
Yeah.
Like no matter what, the sun will probably rise mm-hmm. and the waves will churn
yeah.
and break. And there's nothing you can really do. It's like big natural, unstoppable forces that they're battling against consistently.
Mm-hmm.
And it's this whole thing of them coming to this realization of, as Zephania said, like, this is just the way things are.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, that's shit.
That is bullshit. I refuse to believe it, yes. actually. And I will live my life in denial.
Yes.
Yeah. So Will agrees to show Zephania how to close the windows. And mm-hmm. Zephania and the angels will take care of the specters. They're going to get rid of the spectres.
I love that he's like, but if I open a window now to teach you how to do it, it will create a spectre, right?
Yeah.
And she's like, nah, be right.
Fine.
We'll deal with it.
So I'm like, can you...
Well, if you can deal with that, why can't you deal with everything else?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Come on. Fuck's sake.
If you're powerful enough to close up the Azrael explosion and deal with the spectre mm-hmm. from this one window that Will's opening up to, like, just to teach you how to close them, surely, like, once a year, you can bob along and deal with a spectre so Will and Lyra can visit each other
yeah.
or like step through from one world to the next.
Yeah.
Like surely
yeah.
the least you could do
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
is tackle like one spectre.
Yes, because if you think about it, it like you just said, if they opened a window once a year, if like Lyra walked through it or Will walked through it, closed it immediately, Zephania comes and deals with the spectre, they could have like a day together or whatever, then open it again, clears it immediately so that, like, not a lot of dust flows out. And then...
Or even just, like, a year at a time, they just flip-flop together.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Between each other's worlds.
Yeah.
Because then they've got a year to get sick and then a year to recover and then a year to get... And, like, you probably wouldn't get that bad during that time. I don't know. But, like, there's definitely...
there are ways.
Proactive solutions that we could be coming up with right now to reward these kids for saving the world, you know?
Exactly. Exactly. Will is interested in the fact that angels don't know how to close windows, and then Zephania says the knife was a human invention, which we knew obviously, but it's interesting that that's a thing that they can't really intervene with or know or have that like infinite knowledge of.
At the same time though, she mentions how there's loads of windows in places that like humans could never reach as well, that just exist naturally, like how I think Joppery found a window that existed naturally.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, they do also exist naturally.
Yeah. So, oh, that's true. That's true. So maybe you should have
contradicted.
Maybe you should have learned how to close windows ages ago.
Maybe you should have taught yourself, and you could stop using me for my knowledge. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. So, right here we learn something interesting about a different way to visit different worlds. So Baruch and Balthamos told me that they used openings like that to travel between the worlds. Will angels no longer be able to travel? Will you be confined to one world as we are? And Zephania says, no, we have other ways of traveling. And then Lyra's like, well, can we learn it then? Why can't we learn it? Zephania says that you would call it imagination, but that does not mean it's making things up. It's a form of seeing. It's very real. It's not pretend. They have like this back and forth. And then Zephania says it takes long practice. You have to work. Again, you gotta, you better work, bitch. It's basically Zephania's fucking theme song.
Entire message, yeah.
This is the worst bit, I think.
So rude.
Did you think you could snap your fingers and have it as a gift? Well, yes, because we saved the world, bitch. Do you know what I mean?
Right? Do you think you could snap your fingers and have it as a gift? What is worth having is worth working for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Rude.
Yeah, rude.
So rude. Like, you're not my mum. You're not my teacher. Like, this isn't an Aesop's fable.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not here to like learn a moral of a story. I've just saved the world. Thanks.
Yeah.
Can I not at least have this one?
Yeah. Yeah.
She's a teenager. She should be allowed to be this selfish. I'm 30. I shouldn't be this selfish. Yeah, but I would be.
It's fine. We're just moving through the grief. You know, that's how I do it.
Yeah.
So she says, but you have a friend who has already taken the first steps and who could help you. And Will had no idea who that could be. And at that moment, he wasn't in the mood to ask. I really think he should have asked at that moment. But who?
I think it's Mary.
Is it Mary? I did say, like, my note was, is it Mary? Because I guess she's been working with dust and stuff, right? So
she has her little, like, astral projection-y...
Oh, shit, yeah.
...dusty meditation tree moment.
Yeah.
So maybe it's something to do with that.
Yeah.
But then also, like, yes, Mary has those skills, maybe, but who is it in Lyra's life that has those skills that can teach her?
So Lyra's just got to wait for Will to learn, basically, and hope that he does.
Yeah.
So Will's got to break the knife. He comes to that conclusion by himself that the knife must be broken.
She mentions that they have other work to do.
Just before you get to that.
Yeah, go for it.
The bit here where Will brings up the point that you just made a little bit ago about, you know, there's been windows open for thousands of years that weren't by the knife. Why can't we just leave one of those open? And then she's like, we'll close them all because if you thought that any still remained, you would spend your life searching for one and that would be a waste of the time you have. You have other work than that to do, much more important and valuable in your own world. There will be no travel outside it anymore. Number one, stop fucking telling me what to do. I've just met you.
Who are you? My mum? No, go away.
Right. But also just fucking leave one open. They could still do the work. Whatever this work is that they need to do in their own worlds, they could still do it.
Also, leave one open. And then tell them where it is.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Like, then they wouldn't spend their lives searching for it. Like, do them a favor.
Yeah.
It's the least you can do.
Will has literally just done you a favor. Maybe you could return it.
Yeah. I love that he kind of gets his sass on with her as well, because he's like, oh, what work have I got to do then? Yeah. He's like, no, wait, don't tell me. Because if you tell me, if I end up doing it, I'll resent it because that's what you told me. And if I don't end up doing it, I'll feel guilty. So like, I can't win here, clearly. Clearly, you're here to tell me that I can't win today.
Yeah. Yeah. Which also I feel kind of lends itself to, there's obviously a little bit of anger in there, but it also gives a little bit of hopelessness and it kind of makes me feel of like the depression stage of the like snarky, like, I don't bother fucking telling me anyway because I don't want to know, kind of like has an underlying tone of hopelessness to it, which, you know, could lend itself to the depression side of grief.
Yeah, because yeah, if we were thinking about like the last few things we've spoken about, the dawning of the dawn through the window and the curtains is denial. The giant wave of rage would be the anger.
Yeah.
The back and forth about, oh, maybe we can just leave one window open. Mm-hmm. That's the bargaining. And then Will right now sinking into like, well, nothing matters anymore.
Yeah.
That's a depression.
Yeah.
We're doing them all.
Yep. Yes, we are. So Lyra sees a light out at sea and we learn that the Egyptians are on the way and they'll be there tomorrow, which means that they will have to part ways tomorrow.
Which is devastating, mm-hmm. but also, yay, yeah. Hadakora, Mark Costa, the Egyptians.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lyra can't even be happy about seeing her friends because she knows that it means that, that Will will have to go mm-hmm. away, and that's horrendous.
Also, Zephania now saying, I'm going to go now because I've got what I wanted, basically. I've learned what I needed.
Yeah. She just pieces out. And that's it.
I mean, she gives him a hug and stuff. And, like, it is kind of that, like, matter-of-fact tone in which the angels speak when we had Seraphina saying to Mary, like, embrace me now, sister, and now I'll never see you again. Like, that kind of vibe. But still.
Yeah. It's. I guess it's, like, if the witches are slightly detached for their longer lifespans and superior knowledge of cool stuff, the angels are probably even more detached for their even longer lifespans and superior knowledge of cool stuff, which is annoying.
Yeah.
Annoying.
So annoying. And then we learn that Lyra forgot to ask about her mum and dad.
I hate that. Mm-hmm. I never asked about my father and mother, and I can't ask the alethiometer either now. I wonder if I'll ever know. If only a couple of the key women in your life had been given this information and had chosen to give it to you and not just kept it from you for no particular reason. Assuming that you might ask one day, as if you would know to ask them specifically.
Yeah. It's just so wild.
The fact that literally last chapter we had Seraphina and Mary basically being like, do we tell her?
Mm-hmm.
Nah.
Well, wait till she
actually says this chapter, like, oh, damn, I wish I'd asked.
Come on. For God's sake.
Again, just rude. Lyra doesn't get to keep her special powers or get any closure.
Oh my God, yes. That's another thing that Lyra doesn't get.
Right?
Yeah. Fuck's sake. Okay.
And you know for sure her world does not have therapy.
No. Oh, no.
Or if it does, it's like weird magisterial therapy that nobody needs.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
I feel like Lyra's world almost gives like lobotomy vibes. Do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like that is probably still a thing that happens in that world, or if it doesn't happen anymore, it's only very recently stopped happening.
Yeah, I mean, that's what the demon severing process was, basically.
Yes,
like,
true.
She's just going to get shipped right back off to Bolvanger again. God. Because they're going to be like, this girl, too many emotions.
Oh, for God's
sake. Too traumatised.
So my note on this next bit is, be right back, going to stare at a wall forever.
Sure.
Yeah. So we're obviously going to just have to read this entire page, I guess, because how could we not?
Yeah.
I read this at my friend's wedding.
I love that fact. That's a light little fact, isn't it? Hooray for your friends and their love and them choosing this absolutely devastating book passage for their wedding.
Yeah.
What a choice.
Right.
If anyone else wants to hire Faye to come and read this out loud at their wedding, let us know.
Do you know what? I fucking smashed it. And do you know what I put it down to? The one mojito I had before. I had one mojito. Amazing. And I think that just gave me the confidence that I needed to smash it. yes. So I'm going to like basically read the entire page, but the bit that I read at the wedding starts with the I will love you forever, but I'm going to read it from the top. So, okay. Oh, Will, she said, what can we do? Whatever can we do? I want to live with you forever. I want to kiss you and lie down with you and wake up with you every day of my life till I die. Years and years away. I don't want a memory, just a memory. No, he said. Memory's a poor thing to have. It's your own real hair and mouth and arms and eyes and hands I want. I didn't know I could ever love anything so much. Oh, Lyra, I wish this night would never end. If only we could stay here like this and the world could stop turning and everyone else could fall into a sleep. Everyone except us, and you and I could live here forever and just love each other. I will love you forever, whatever happens, till I die and after I die. And when I find my way out of the land of the dead, I'll drift about forever, all my atoms, till I find you again. I'll be looking for you, Will, every moment, every single moment. And when we do find each other again, we'll cling together so tight that nothing and no one will ever tear us apart. Every atom of me and every atom of you. We'll live in birds and flowers and dragonflies and pine trees and in clouds and in those little specks of light you see floating in sunbeams. And when they use our atoms to make new lives, they won't just be able to take one. They'll have to take two. One of you and one of me will be joined so tight.
Thanks. Thanks for that, hey.
You're welcome.
Oh, I'm so happy now. Yeah. This is the definitely... You know what, though? Well done. Well done, then. Mm-hmm. What a lovely exchange. I feel like it's so true.
Mm.
Like, the way that they say it, just like, I don't want your memory, I want you.
Yeah.
You specifically. The way that they list it out and... everything. And I know that the every atom of me and every atom of you speech is iconic for a reason, but it's just so, I can't think of a word.
I think
it just sticks with you. It's impactful, but it's because it feels so genuine, and it shouldn't, because it's so grand and so like beyond what you'd expect a teenager to say, and yet it just is correct.
So
like, it is.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the speech, the atom speech, like you said, it's iconic, it's wonderful, it's devastating. But for me, I think it's the stuff that comes before it. It's the like simplicity in what you just said of, I don't want a memory, I want you. Like, I will love you forever. Like, I want your mouth and your hands and your kisses and all this like really like visceral but very simple language that you might expect to come from a teenager rather than the atom speech. And I'm not shitting on the atom speech because it is so beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
But for me personally, it's the simple visceral things that get me more than like a metaphorical speech. Obviously, I love a good metaphor, but in terms of this, I like... this simple.
It's the way it builds, I think, from the really simple, and then it kind of steps up the levels until you get to the thing that is a bit quite like, I guess, the message of the book and the message that we've had kind of before from like Lee and Hester, and Lee's ghost going to find Hester, and like we've had talk of his atoms like finding Hester and all that kind of thing. And it's that idea of not just the ghost finding the demon now, but two ghosts finding each other that I think is so like impactful. It's not just this like grand metaphysical thing, it's just love.
I think also one of the most devastating bits about this particular like passage in the book is how they say this big speech and then they start really lovingly jokingly talking about how they first met and what that was like, and that just devastates me, like, because they have like a little like mocking argument in a way, don't they, where they're like just joshing with each other.
That classic, like, well, we can't just be devastated constantly. I want to enjoy the time I'm spending with you. Let's say something lighthearted. And that whole thing of, like, Lyra mentioning to Will, like, oh, and you'd never seen a demon before when you first met me. And Will was like, oh, I liked you straight away because you were brave. And she's like, no, I liked you first. And he's like, no, you didn't. You attacked me. And she's like, yeah, well, you attacked me. Mm-hmm. He's like, I didn't. You came charging out and attacked me. And she's like, yeah, but I stopped. And he was like, yeah, but. Yeah. And it's like, that's so cute.
Yeah.
That's so cute. Mm-hmm. And it's so exactly right for the vibe that is, you've had a really devastating conversation and you've got to shift gear because you don't want to just be sad the whole time.
Yeah.
And it's a lot. It's a lot.
And I think the bit after that, he felt her tremble, and then under his hands, the delicate bones of her back began to rise and fall, and he heard her sob quietly. He stroked her warm hair, her tender shoulders, and then he kissed her face again and again, and presently she gave a deep, shuddering sigh and fell still. And to that, for me, that feels like acceptance.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm.
Ugh, fuck's sake. For fuck's sake.
And then... the demons fly back down as birds and they change again and come towards them on the sand, and Pan's an animal that they don't immediately recognize but eventually puts his finger on it and he's a pine martin, and Kiava is a cat, which I love the description of Kiava, She's a cat again, but she was a cat of no ordinary size, and her fur was lustrous and rich with a thousand different glints and shades of inky black, shadow grey, and the deep blue of a lake under a noon sky, mist, lavender, moonlight, fog. To see the meaning of the word subtlety, you had only to look at her fur. And I love that. I love that he gets a black cat. So witchy.
Yeah.
So perfect.
I think the like use of the word subtlety as well, and everything in that description is just the fitting of Will, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so great. Mm-hmm. And then Lyra asks Pan, like, oh, I don't think you're going to change anymore, are you? Or change a lot anymore? And he's like, no. And they kind of reminisce about when, because if you think one of the first conversations that mm-hmm. Lyra and Pan have in the first book is like what they think that he'll settle as. And it keeps coming up, like, what do you think you settle as, Pan? And he's like, oh, I'm going to be a spider or a moth or something to annoy her. And she's like, no.
Yeah.
But it's so sweet that we're kind of wrapping up on this as well. Yeah.
I love her mention of, like, oh, you know, like, I used to be, I never wanted you to stay in the same form, but now I feel like I'd be okay with it. And, like, it's such a nice, like, nod to growing up, isn't it? Of, like, all these things that you maybe felt when you were a little bit younger, you don't feel them now, or, like, your thoughts have changed. And, you know, it like talks to how as humans we are constantly changing, and one thing that we thought we wanted, you know, whenever this was, like a year ago or whatever, months ago, like I'm still a bit hazy on the timeline, she doesn't want that anymore.
Yeah. It's that acceptance again, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
That like I'll accept that you're going to be the same. And then they touch each other's demons.
So this bit, I don't want to like, what's the word, like undermine it in any way because it's so beautiful. Mm. But Will has touched Pan before, right?
Pan has touched Will.
Ah, okay.
He's like grazed his nose on Will's hand when Will was in like loads of pain with the knife. And they accidentally grabbed each other's demons when they were escaping.
Yes.
When they very first found them again before they ran off.
Yeah.
So they've never done it in quite such a deliberate fashion, mm-hmm. I think.
Yes, that's true. Yeah. I love that. So like you said, Will touches Lyra's Pan, and then Lyra touches Kayava. And just like the last two paragraphs. Do you want to read them? Because I've read so much and I thought, I feel like I'm stealing the reading thunder here, this chapter.
I'm just going to do the whole last bit.
Yeah.
Will put his hand on hers. A new mood had taken hold of him, and he felt resolute and peaceful. Knowing exactly what he was doing and exactly what it would mean, he moved his hand from Lyra's wrist and stroked the red gold fur of her demon. Lyra gasped, but her surprise was mixed with a pleasure, so like the joy that flooded through her when she had put the fruit to his lips that she couldn't protest because she was breathless. With a racing heart, she responded in the same way. She put her hand on the silky warmth of Will's demon, and as her fingers tightened in the fur, she knew that Will was feeling exactly what she was. And she knew that neither demon would change now, having felt a lover's hands on them. These were their shapes for life. They would want no other. So wondering whether any lovers before them had made this blissful discovery, they lay together as the earth turned slowly and the moon and the stars blazed above them. I love that moment. Also, in the back of my head is the little joke of me hearing the Married at First Sight Australia people being like, let's lock it in
for the demons.
let's lock these demons in.
Yes. Yeah. Oh my God. Yes.
Just to finish on a high there.
Yeah. Love that. Thank you. That really should be up.
Yeah. Oh, but I wonder if it is a thing that is like, have other people just, I mean, they will have, surely.
Well, I was thinking that. But it's interesting, isn't it? Because, like, it again, it's a really clever way of speaking to the intimacy of romantic relationships between people. Because, you know, there are some things when you're in a relationship and you think, oh, I wonder if anyone else is like, had that feeling, or is my love unique? Like, am I the only one that's ever felt this way? We're the only people to have ever felt this way about each other. It's kind of in a similar vein, isn't it? Of like, ooh, has anyone made this discovery? Has anyone done this before?
Has anyone else ever kissed and it saved the world? Just wondering. Just for
well, exactly. I think they win that competition, don't they? I think they're the only people that can say that they've done that. But no, I'm with you though. I do think that it's probably something that people that are in intimate relationships have done.
But it's just such a lovely sentence, especially because like all through the books it's drilled into us that touching someone else's demon is this big thing, is this taboo. But then this whole book is kind of about reframing how we view things that are taboo, like Lyra's fruit moment that is apparently so taboo, mm-hmm. they cut it out of the American version of the book, when the whole point of the books is about reframing these things and the way that we view this like journey from innocence to experience, and the fact that it is going from the first book being like, oh my god, nobody ever touches a demon, it's such a taboo, it's like a thing that kids like have learned to fear but also kind of find fascinating. Yeah. And then at the end of these books, like the penultimate chapter, that's literally what they do. They touch each other's demons, but it's not a yeah. bad thing. But also it has happened no. in the books earlier, and it has been a bad thing. So it's that whole thing of like, mm-hmm. it's how you frame it. It's how it's presented to you. It's about consent.
Intent, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Consent and intent.
Exactly.
Know? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So.
We did it.
We did it. We did it. Tell me who your award would
oh my
be
god
for.
So I was feeling really shitty when I was writing my notes at the end of this chapter. I was yeah. livid,
mm-hmm. as is your right.
Yes. And so my note for awards is, can I give a reverse award, an anti award, Zephania fuck off award, with special mention to Phil for being a big old meanie.
Yes, I will allow it.
So it's, I don't know what the reversing of award is. Like, is it a fine?
Ooh. Is it a curse?
Is it a curse? Yes. Is it a hex? Do we place a hex on them? I think
yes,
so.
I think we might have yeah. to. Yeah. A fine. That was, I love that, like, that's the more logical one. And I just immediately said curse.
No, well, a curse is more doable, I feel like, collectively, if we yeah, get enough listeners true. To, like, mentally curse yes. the character of Zephania. Yeah. The real human man, Philip Pullman. No, don't. We need him to finish the third book. No cursing him until after that book comes out. If we get enough people thinking about it at the same time, the dust will just make it happen, right?
Yeah, I agree. I think that's true. I love yours. I wish I'd thought of something like that, but I was just so devastated when I finished taking my notes that the only thing that I could think to do was give it to Will and Lyra.
Yeah, I mean, fair. They need something.
Yeah.
Literally anything. Because God knows they've not been allowed to keep what they already deserved after saving the world.
We'd have to give them one each, because who would take it? I'm so sorry.
No, we give them an award, but we seal it up in Chittagatsi, because that's the in-between world. And then we can all be even more devastated.
Okay, that has to be done. So, for the very, 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 very last time, what is the next chapter called?
It's actually called I'm Not Doing This Anymore and I'm going to Quit the Podcast.
I quit.
It's called The Botanic Garden.
I'm not ready.
I am.
No.
Oh, how weird. How weird. It's right. We've still got a few episodes left even after we do the last chapter, but ooh.
It's true. Yeah. It's the last book chapter of this trilogy. Mm-hmm. It'll be a very long time before I ask if we do the next trilogy, it shall still be a while before I ask the question of what the next chapter is called.
Yeah.
Let's chew on that, shall we?
Now you're all right. I'll just stay in denial. I'm still at the denial phase. While Lyra and Will have rolled through all these stages of grief in this chapter, I'm just kicking off. We've been doing denial for a little while, actually, because we have been putting off recording this episode. We've been pretty furious during this episode. So I think next week we'll do some bargaining. Before we carry on being depressed.
We've got those two in the bag for sure. Depression also is probably in there. But yeah, bargaining is up and coming.
I mean, I suppose we've done that by altering the schedule so much, but no, it's fine.
That's true.
Yes. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Her Dark Materials. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at HDMPod, and you can email us at herdarkmaterialspod@gmail.com. You can also visit our website at hdmpod.co.uk.
If you want to support us, you can become a patron at patreon.com/HDMPod. We also have a shop where you can buy merch featuring all original artwork from Rach. You can find it at hdmpod.co.uk/shop. I'm Faye, and when I'm not crying about Lyra and Pan and Will and Kayava, you can find me talking about Paramore on my other podcast, Still Into You. You can listen wherever you get your podcasts and find us on Twitter and Instagram at Still Into You Pod.
I'm Rachel. Oh, and I'm not here chatting to you lovely folks about being emotionally devastated and feeling like a hollow, hollow shell. I am making cute and magical arty things. You can find me over on Instagram at RachMakes, on Twitter and TikTok at Rach_makes, and over on my online shop, rachmakes.co.uk.
And we'll see you in 2 weeks' time. And don't forget,
keep telling stories.
And all will be well.
Will it?
Because at this point, it doesn't feel like it
really
will be.
Doesn't. It really doesn't. Great. Oh. See you next time. Bring the tissues.
Yes.